This podcast contains strong language and mature content. Earmuffs, kiddos. Hey, what's up? This is Ashley, and I'm your host of the Kilter and Mint podcast. Thank you for tuning in to episode 54. On today's episode, I'm joined by two of my favorite humans, Justine Soans and Jen Kasuya. We banter, surprise, surprise, and then dive right in. Jen shares where she's at with baby number two and how things have materialized this time round. We jam on the falsities of connection on social media, our disassociation and disconnection in the early days of child rearing, and anger. Oh yes, moving through the emotions. So before we get into today's episode, I want to thank you for listening, subscribing, reviewing, and recommending this podcast to your family and friends. It has been an up and down journey with podcasting and a lot of learning along the way. And also, we wouldn't be at episode 54 without your support. So whether you were an early adopter or if this is your first time tuning in, your words of encouragement and ratings and reviews are cherished. One way of continuing to show your support is by supporting my coffee. Check out my coffee page linked in the show notes. I'd like to give a special mention to B, Kelly, Sonia and Jen for their support and making it possible to transcribe this episode. Okay, without further ado, let's get into today's episode featuring Justine and Jen.
It was just embarrassing.
Yeah, no, the sweat's real.
I'm still an active sweater, a very active sweater.
Yeah, but who actually glistens? Actually, a handful of people that I've met who are like, I just don't sweat, and I look at them every time, and I wonder out loud, like the Wonder Years, like, how is that healthy for you? Yeah. How do you not sweat? Where does it go? Do you pee a lot?
Actually, yeah. Here's the thing. That's a lie. I don't sweat on my forehead.
Really?
Where do you sweat?
Botox.
Oh.
So, and think about it, some people get Botox in their armpits to stop them from sweating.
I used to use this stuff called Drysol that was like...
Me too.
Aluminum something. Like, you put that stuff on at night to like clog your pores and it burned like a motherfucker. Like,
you weren't allowed to use it. If you had freshly shaved, you had to wait like 4 days and make sure you had armpit hair because otherwise the pores were too open.
Like, oh, yeah.
And now it causes breast cancer because you were just clogging all your limb.
It would be like a side effect will be that you will sweat more in other areas. So suddenly it
would be like it comes out somewhere else.
It
right?
has to. Yeah.
It's like just spout a new hole. It's just like.
Yeah.
You just neck sweat all of a sudden.
Like, you go running, it's like your carotid artery. Like boom.
Boom. Out of your ears, behind your ears.
And it was, I don't know, maybe from a podcast, and someone's like walking through a woods and like you can hear the amplified sounds. And I actually did really appreciate what it like brought to the conversation that it like felt like you're actually there.
Was it like the cat lady one? The CBC Uncovered podcast?
Oh, no, not
they
that.
They do some crunchy leaf walking.
No, but I've heard the segments for that. No, it was about a production of some variety that's being put on about an indigenous wild woman named something that I can't remember, which I'm gonna have to look up, but that she goes and like steals children and stuff like that. So they were talking about this story and like the metaphor and like they were out in the woods and all of this stuff, but it was actually really, really cool because the whole story they were talking about how it actually represents like the residential schools and like stealing the indigenous children and all of that. I want to look up the name. Maybe it was like on the early edition with Stephen Quinn or something.
Oh,
like that
classic. Here, book to put underneath.
Oh yeah,
okay. Underneath the where?
Underneath your mugs.
Oh.
So what
Our
book
mugs?
Do you have?
Me?
Yeah.
The witch doesn't burn in this one.
I have The Mermaid's Voice Returns in this one.
And I have The Princess Saves Herself in this one.
Oh, good one. Wow.
It's almost like I'm like writing about female empowerment or something like that. It's so weird.
Wait. Oh, got it. Jokes, because you are. So welcome to today's banter featuring
Jen Kasuya
And
Justine Zone.
And Ashley Blues.
I was the only one that was question mark.
I think this is who I am. I'm not actually sure anymore.
Yeah. It's it can get quite confusing with three voices, so it's important for us to identify ourselves at the beginning. So, I mean, if you want to finish each sentence with an up top, no, just kidding.
Question. You'll know it's me if you hear. So, I have a theory.
Yeah. You'll hear the cerebral one being Justine. I will say something inappropriate. And then...
I mean, just a wild card. Who knows what will come out of my mouth.
Exactly. And in fact, in today's episode, I'm probably going to take a little bit of a back seat, because I think it's really important for you two to have more of this discussion. And I'll jump in where I need. But otherwise, I'm just really excited for today. I'm sure if you have listened to any One Witch episode beforehand, you would have heard me talk about Jen Kazuya. And so now we have her here in the flesh. And we are sitting on Justine's couch as she, would you say, pairs her socks?
Oh yeah, I'm pairing socks.
She's pairing socks. And we didn't actually come to this with any formed thoughts or ideas. So we had a quick chat over a cup of tea of what we're going to talk about. And hey, like Jen said, wild card.
Who knows where we'll go?
I don't know. I don't know. Okay, ladies.
Great. Let's take it away. So Jen and I met through Ashley. When did we first meet?
I was like, I actually don't think we met in real life for a really long time.
Like until one of kiddos, Ashley's baby's birthday parties.
Yeah.
Or that was the first like time. That was, I feel like, your coming out to my friends.
Where you met.
Where you met.
With my quinceañera.
With your quinceañera.
That's amazing.
It was your Shabbat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever get any like anxiety when you're meeting people's friends?
Meeting people's friends. No, it's one of those things more so I find now, especially with Instagram and like social media being so wide, where I feel like I've known someone for so much longer. And even today when Ashley was like, oh, Joe redid the deck, I was like, oh, I know, I saw the Instagram stories. I was like, and you say it and you realize what a weirdo you sound like.
Yes.
But that's how relationship one aspect of relationship works now, where it's like, oh, I know so much about you because I see your everyday moments posted in these weird ways. Or people that I work with are like, how are you? And I was like, good. I know that you're here and here. And they're like, why do you know that? I was like, it's on your social media.
Yeah.
And I'm scrolling it at 4 a.m.
Isn't that the truth? Oh, my gosh. And I was talking to, who was I talking to about this the other day? Because I'm not on social media this month. I'm doing No So Memo, which is No Social Media Month. Sounds ridiculous. But what I found is that I don't have this, like, fear of missing out that I thought I would have, but almost this, like, guilt of missing out, where I feel badly that I'm not aware of what's going on in everybody's life when I want to be. But at the same time, I feel like I don't actually have the bandwidth for it, and I haven't found that balance yet between being, like, aware and tuned in and whatever, and like it just being too overwhelming for me.
But there's something great about that when you ask someone what they've been doing, because then they have to verbalize to you what they've actually been doing, and what they'll give you is the highlight reel that matters to them, not necessarily what like what they've ended up posting.
Yeah, you mean like in person versus on
social
media? Well, and I find that now when people ask me, they're like, oh, what have you been up to? I'm like, I don't know. I haven't actually been documenting it. Like, I'm not, there's no like library of this whatever. But we actually had, I was at a philosophy class with Ash the other day and met Melissa, who, have you had her on the podcast before?
No,
but I think we follow each other through the social media network stuff. But anyway, she was like, oh yeah, we've already met, haven't we? And we were going back and forth, and she's like, nope, just on Instagram. Just kidding, we haven't actually met. But it created this like, almost like false sense of intimacy, where it's like,
Well, it's weird because you have to start all over again, even though you know, like you feel like you know someone. So even though I follow you and I know you through Instagram and I know you through friends of friends, multiple friends like yourself and Jess Robson and Liz it's one of those things where it's like, well, I don't actually know you and you don't really know me because we've never sat down and had a conversation. You've never seen me eat a meal, so you don't know, like, if I'm a weird person or not. Or
well, like, I mean, given the company we keep, I'm assuming that you are a weird person.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fair. But, like, there's, like, you know, those things that you get to know someone in those little moments. You get to know someone on a road trip. You get to know someone hanging out with them or meeting them or, like, all those things you miss out on. And we just jump to this place of, like you said, false intimacy where mm-hmm. you're like, no, we've been friends for, like, 800 days. Or however long I've known you on Instagram.
Or whatever it is, like, 462 weeks.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. 14 weeks. And what I'm really excited for you to get into is because a lot of your lives from someone who knows you both intimately beyond social media is that you have a lot of parallels in your life and have gone through very similar things, but I don't think you two have ever had the opportunity to sit down and chat. And for, who knows, thousands of listeners, I'm going to say thousands of listeners because it sounds good, so they can hear, like, this connection happen organically over folding socks.
Yes, in all of its awkward goodness.
Yeah.
Right? Well, what I find so interesting, too, is that there are so many overlaps in different, like, so we both have two kids.
Mm-hmm,
we
mm-hmm.
both are acquainted with the, like, general, like, wellness Lululemon-ish mm-hmm, community mm-hmm. in this area. And yet there's just so many things that are so different mm-hmm. about it. So, yeah. Anyway.
So what do you want to talk about?
I want to hear how things are going with your second kid. Again, when Ashley and I kicked off Motherhood Unfiltered, it was when I was, like, kind of getting through the throes of adjusting to two, and I find now whenever people, like, say that they're going to have a second kid, I'm always a little bit like, oh, yeah, that's really good for you. And so I'm...
Secretly, you're like, don't do it.
I'm just... I had one case where there was, like, a real bad evening, and I said to a friend, like, oh, thank God you only have one kid, and he kind of did, like, this awkward, ha-ha, and the next week they're like, we're pregnant! And I'm like, oh, shit.
It's like the Sex and the City movie.
Yes!
And just starts the ball rolling.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Also, so, recently we rewatched that because I'm on mat leave.
Yes.
I just got, like, the Crave HBO whatever and want to watch, like, Sex and the City from the beginning. But yeah, in all of that, I'm just really curious to know, like, how having two, what your expectations were, and how you've actually found it.
So, fun side fact about me is I often don't think deeply about what it will be like in the future for myself. So, slightly problematic when you're child planning.
I feel personally attacked right now by this comment.
I don't. I was like, well, my philosophy on most life is just like, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And, like, throw whatever against the wall and whatever sticks. You're like, well, fuck it, it works.
Yep.
But,
Children.
It's been a trip, that's for sure. We are very, very lucky to have a healthy baby boy who's almost 9 months old now. And he arrived in a really wonderful way. I was able to have the kind of birth that I wanted to have. So he was a VBAC, so a vaginal birth after a C-section. And that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to experience a new form of labor and have my baby the way I wanted to have him. And so I was super proud that I got to do that and super honored that I got to do that. And ever since that, and ever since his arrival, it's just been so different for my daughter. My daughter is six, so we have the space of a really large age gap, which has been worked out really well, in my opinion, because she's so strong and she's so independent and she's so very much into being a big sister and a caretaker, and mm-hmm. she's a very sweet and empathetic and caring human and kind human. So she's really into caring for him, and she's very protective and she's super into it. So that's been really great because it's provided me some space to not feel like I need to not mother her. I still mother her. I still care for her, but there's a little bit more space where I can trust that she can get herself dressed. I can mm-hmm. trust that she can make herself a bowl of cereal. Or she yeah. can get me something.
Or you don't have to worry about her going, eyeball gouge.
Yeah, oh. I mean. Like, the way she loves is very in his face. Like, she's right. a, well, she's a in there. Yeah. She's not a part-time lover. She's, like, right yeah. in there. But for us as a family of four plus a dog, the adjustment has been really wild. We are still living in the same place, which is 2-bedroom, 2-bathrooms. So with 4 humans and a dog, like, that's new. There's no amount of sparking joy and tidying that will ever make our space big enough. It's cramped quarters. It's a lot of on the go. Terry started a wonderful new job that's so great for him, and the hours for him are really different. Mm. He had been freelancing mm-hmm. at home and working from home and having a lot of luxury and his like best life to be able to pick Scarlett up every day and walk her to and from, and now he's commuting and he's working downtown, so it's really different. And in the last, I'd probably say the last 2.5 to 3 months, I have slowly started to get that sinking feeling and had a breaking point this past weekend where I know that I'm not doing okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm really struggling in a really different way than the first time. Mm-hmm. Like, the first time with Scarlett, my postpartum was more... Like, I felt like I was forever sad.
Right.
Like, it was forever, it was like this overwhelming melancholy, like, I still could, but like, it was like, if I listened to My Chemical Romance on repeat all day, every day, yes. like, it's like this longing sad that I had.
Like emo.
It's like, beyond emo, like, I...
Like a German emo.
I don't even know what that means.
Oh, like techno emo. Like you're, yeah, forever sad.
I felt like I was in mourning, like almost.
Yeah, like it's that kind of like deep sadness in your soul, like in your bones.
Yeah, and it's like I've been reading a lot about like grief and all the forms that it can take. And one of the, like, I don't want to know that signature is the right word, but... like associations with grief is that sense of like loss of, I don't know, like feeling tethered to whatever, like that loss of purpose, that loss of understanding that, like, and that's kind of, I think, how I felt with the first versus the second was it was just, yeah, this like melancholy, like what is, but then also anxious.
Yeah. The anxiety was really real with Scarlett. Cause I felt like at any turn I was about to kill her. If it wasn't, you know, like, it was like, make sure you swaddle your baby, like SIDS, flu, shots, vaccines. It was like at every turn, there were about 18,000 things that I could do that would kill my child. Mm-hmm. And this time with Max, I don't feel like he's a solid little chunk of a human. So like,
I want to suck on his cheeks. Like every time I see him, I just want to be like,
He's so sturdy.
Let me near your babies, people. Yeah. Really, I swear I can be trusted.
He's just like, I know that he's sturdy. Like, what I know now is that, like, small babies are meant to survive. Like,
yes.
They'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. They're so resilient.
Yeah, totally. And so this time it's more of the depression is there and the sad is there, but it's like this overwhelming, like this wave of battling between like the sad. And then I hit this like white hot anger that flares up. And it's so vast, but it's just like a wave. Like, it crests at the same time. Like, I get so angry and so hot, and like everything about my being gets fired up over something completely trivial or so useless. The sound of people chewing with their mouths open right now drives me a level of insane that's not healthy, and I know that. And I do know that you should chew with your mouth closed. Yeah. And, like, it shouldn't make
me that mad, yeah. but right now it is, and it's something that just, like, sets me off, and then after I finish being so angry and I have an outburst or it escapes me in whatever form it takes, mm-hmm. I just get so sad mm-hmm. because I'm so embarrassed and I'm so disappointed and I'm not who I thought I would be or how it's going, and whether it's open mouth chewing or my lovely daughter being too affectionate and being all over me after mm-hmm. I've had a really long day with a clingy baby. I'm just, like, my reaction to things is so, so short and so vast right now that I hit a breaking point this weekend, and it felt like it all just, like, when you pull a thread, it was like you pulled the thread around my body and, like, everything came spilling out. Mm-hmm. And it was just so hard because it felt like, and I was texting Ash and saying, like, I need to tell you something. I'm not okay. Like, I don't need anything from you other than to know that you're there and you'll listen to me and you'll bear witness to this moment where I'm saying, I don't want to talk to you on the phone because it's going to get real messy real fast, but I'll text you and tell you I'm not okay.
And then I'll respond with, I have charcuterie.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important because, like, I know for me going through that kind of experience, there was almost this, like, two things happening. There was this, like, awareness that I was so out of control and not acting the way that I wanted to be, and I felt powerless to do anything, like, differently in that moment. And then there's that, like, guilt shame spiral that mm-hmm. keeps me in that place and keeps me from reaching out, because what kind of mother does mm-hmm. this? And yet in the midst of that, we do have these tiny slivers of, like, whatever our survival instinct is that says you need to say something
yep.
to someone, and that's enough for now. 'Cause yep. And I remember sending messages to you that are just like, I'm not okay, and I only feel brave enough to say this in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, like,
don't ask me to elaborate.
Yeah.
You just, this is, like, my little moment of, I need help, but I don't know what that help is.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you asking, how can I help you? It can also be detrimental. Mm-hmm. You just need to, like, find a way to be there for that person or find a way to support them from the peripheral.
Well, yeah, and I think sometimes too, it's like, you know, when you see these mental destigmatized mental illness waves coming across social media, and people will say, like, if you're ever hurting, just reach out, like, I'm always here, and it almost fundamentally misses that the illness makes it almost impossible to reach out,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's like, to put the onus on an ill person to do something about it is hard, it's a lot, but then in those moments that you are able to reach out, it's like, yeah, instead of saying, like, how can I help you, and then putting on additional
mm-hmm.
Like, work for it, it's just like, I'm here for you, like, I have charcuterie, or
mm-hmm.
like, I have a glass of wine, or I'm on my way, or, like, can I clean your bathroom? And, like, it's like, if that person reaches out to you, they're saying, I trust you enough to know me and show up for me. And so, you know, like, I think that there's something so beautiful in that.
Well, some of the time too, it's a matter of actually saying, I'm not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then there doesn't need to be anything on the end. And that doesn't need to be my sentence with, like, an ellipses or three dots at the end. That's just my sentence.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not okay can be full stop.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something in that too, where, you know, I am lucky to be on mat leave. I am lucky to be able to walk my daughter to school every day. And every day, six different people ask me how I'm doing. And every day, I tell six different lies. And so mm-hmm. to actually say, I'm not okay, full stop, allows me to say, I don't need to pretend in this
mm-hmm.
moment. I choose to pretend, and I know that I choose to pretend with people that I don't feel comfortable with
mm-hmm.
or I don't have the same relationship with. But it also makes me realize how important it is that I can have that overwhelming feeling where I'm, like, sitting on the end of my bed, watching my smallest one play, sobbing, like, I can't function, and I can text a friend and say, I need you to know this,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not feeling like I'm going to hurt myself. I would never hurt my children. I just need someone to hear me. Mm-hmm. And I just need someone to say, okay. And that needs to be it. Mm-hmm. And I think about how in those moments, to your point, when someone says, just reach out, what the response is. So also knowing how that feels on my end too. I've come across probably about 3 or 4 people on social media who have like expressed like they're not okay or they're having a hard time. And when I feel compelled to message them and say something, it's, I hope that whatever you're feeling, like, you know, you're, like, you're hanging in there. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever you're feeling, you can feel it. I'm so sorry that it probably feels gross, but like, hang in there. And if there's anything you need or anything I can do to help you from this side, like, mm-hmm. let me know, but mm-hmm. I'm thinking of you, mm-hmm. and that needs to be it. And so hard sometimes just to say, I'm not okay. Mm-hmm. And we talk about ending mental health stigmas and all those things. And it's just so interesting because I feel like postpartum has come so far in the 6 years since I had Scarlett, where it felt like there was nobody to talk to about any of these things, and anything around postpartum was so sensationalized, unfortunately, by mm-hmm. some really terrible, traumatic things that people experienced and that we saw in the news, mm-hmm. and we saw make headlines for really sad reasons.
Mm-hmm. Which postpartum psychosis and postpartum depression are two incredibly different things.
Mm-hmm.
So... Just
yeah,
as I'm just
but it gets
there,
swept together.
Yes,
you
yes,
know,
they do.
And people aren't able to tell the difference. Or when you say or some people still call it the baby blues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's more than that
mm-hmm.
for some people, and for some people not. But like, yeah. it's such a wide spectrum. But now it feels like it's so much more of a common vernacular.
Mm-hmm.
People are sharing more of their experience.
Mm-hmm.
But even in sharing it, there's something so, and maybe this is just me, or I'll speak for me, actually. Something for me is that it's still very much rooted in ego. Like, I'm not ready to let a ton of people into it. And so,
except for right now?
Yeah, except for this moment where I'm talking to thousands of listeners.
Thousands.
Or 500 people with 2 ears. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, can I use that as my metric?
Yes.
Yes. Thousands of ears and thousands of eyes have listened and seen the Kilter and Mint podcast.
Yeah.
I enjoy that you put an accent on it.
Yes.
It's because of my dad wrote a porno.
I was listening to that on the way here, and I was like, I have nothing of value. When you're like, I was listening to a CBC podcast, I was like, oh God, I just finished the most terrible chapter of my dad wrote a porno.
You haven't gotten onto that yet, have you?
No, I haven't.
We're going and seeing them live.
I can't handle.
We're seeing Justine.
I don't even know what they is, like, what we're talking about.
Okay, we'll talk about it afterwards. We'll listen to a little bit of an episode. I'm not going to take away from Jen's time, but it's British, and pretty much Belinda Blumenthal was pretty fantastic with her beautiful, magnificent breasts.
I'm so excited.
Anyways, back. Sorry, digress.
So I want to come back to, you said you, like, so you haven't been ready to talk about it with a lot of people.
No. I put together a really great fake. Like, I'm really good at faking it. Maybe because a little bit of everything I've ever done has been like not fake it till you make it, but just like pretend like you know what you're doing and you'll be fine. That's like,
yeah.
Yeah. Wide eyes.
Isn't that
shifty eyes? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm spending my whole life waiting for the other shoe to drop, but so far we're hopping along here.
Well, I mean,
I think that's like life summed up.
Yeah.
Shifty eyes and nodding your head.
Well, I have a BA in English Literature and Literary Studies. I basically have a degree in bullshitting people.
Yes.
Mm. Actually, I think we're all quite talented at that. My goodness, Justine.
I mean, speak for yourself.
Okay, sorry. Projecting my imposter syndrome on my twin.
No, I can just talk anybody into anything. But then what makes it different now? Like, why did you decide that you want to, like, because I know, like, I have my reasons for why I came public with my story, and so does Ash. But, like, what made it different for you now?
I feel like what made it different this time than last time is that I am 6 years older. I am 6 years more experienced, more worldly. I know more than I did before. And what I know now is that I can't keep pretending like I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that if I continue to pretend like I'm okay, what will happen is at some point I will erupt like a volcano.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of really making memories and enjoying this time, I will loathe it.
Mm.
And then when I'm over it, I will look back with great remorse at what an asshole I was because I just wanted it to be over and I faked my way through it. And so I don't regret any of Scarlett's childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I did the best I could with what I had and what I knew,
mm-hmm.
and I enjoyed so much of it, but there's also so much of it that I think I've forgotten because that was part of my coping.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, I don't want to forget because I would forget two little lifetimes and two childhoods,
mm-hmm.
and the impact of that already makes my heart so sad,
mm-hmm.
and like already makes my heart so sad that on the hardest of days, like I put my face in a pillow and scream and just wish it would all be over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really hard because I wanted so much to have a family.
Yes. Oh, I find that can be such a difficult part of the whole conversation is like, isn't this exactly what I wanted?
Yeah.
So, isn't this exactly what I wanted? And it's not at all what I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, for me, the difference even between the first and the second was, like, with the sadness of the first versus the rage of the second, it just made me feel like such a worse mother,
mm-hmm.
for, again, like, not wanting this thing that I wanted so badly and then handling it so poorly. And then to your note of forgetting things, like, it took going to therapy. I realize I've now been going to my therapist for like over a year,
mm-hmm.
which is like wild. But one of the things that would happen is I'd be in the middle of telling a story and I would just like trail off and lose my train of thought and I'd have no idea what I was saying. And I would always just kind of chalk it up to being like, oh, I'm sleep deprived. Oh, I'm like tired and whatever.
Yeah.
And what she called out is that it was actually a dissociation. So, because it would be as I was describing moments that were really difficult, and as a method of self-preservation, I would just, like, disconnect from the whole experience. And so it's like, I do feel like I've missed a lot of my children's younger years. And I was looking through the pictures in my phone the other day and finding these videos, and it was actually really beautiful because it was like, I mean, in the midst of, like, all the really sad pictures that I documented of myself, because I took a lot of sad selfies, because I really wanted to, again, capture that, like, raw truth, but there were also all these videos that I forgot about where, like, we were laughing and having this, like, beautiful time, and so it's, like, now my work is almost to rewrite that story because I still do carry that shame of, like, remembering the blow-ups, and, like, I still sometimes see the effects of my oldest, almost like compensating for my emotions,
mm-hmm.
which is so much
mm-hmm.
to ask of a young child. But yeah, so it's like going back now, recognizing that I've engaged in that, like subconsciously dissociated, and learning strategies to remain tethered to what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So even like last week we went out for a family dinner and there was nothing crazy going on. It was just like the kids were loud and playing with toys and my oldest puts his cup too close to the edge of the table all the time.
Classic.
Like, I don't understand why this neural
why
pathway...
Why do you think that this will go differently than the 800 times before you've done
seriously?
This?
Seriously. And so it was like, he almost spilled it like 3 times and I caught it and I caught it and I caught it. And each time that it happened, like nothing bad actually happened, but my response gets like engaged,
mm-hmm.
engaged, engaged. And then all of a sudden it happened one more time and I just like dissociated, I grabbed like a crayon and start coloring. And my husband's sitting there, he's like, where did you go? He's like trying to like bring me back to the present.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that this actually ended up playing out over the last couple of years is like, the stimulus and inability to like react at a normal level would cause me to then dissociate and disconnect from what was happening, which then creates this story with my partner that says that I don't care about him and I'm not listening and I'm not part of whatever, which then makes things worse again. So it's crazy how it becomes this like pervasive thing just because we like escalate in those moments.
Yeah.
But it's like, how do we do the work of reining that in while healing what's past, while doing...
While remaining present and taking in these moments and, like, you know, how people always say, oh, I miss that time, and that time goes by so fast. And when you're in it, you're like, how do I capture this?
I didn't start,
How do I hold on to it and keep these memories? It's almost like you're creating a FOMO in the moment.
Yeah.
Is what I found for myself. Mm-hmm. And hearing you speak about this of missing those moments from the first and me just having the one, I think that that's really resonant probably for a lot of parents of, oh my gosh, I missed this. I'm disassociated, or I wasn't present because I was dealing with my own emotions and thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Then this is a bigger, if this is all three of us thinking this, then this is a bigger conversation when it comes to parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And letting go of that guilt of, oh my gosh, I missed those moments, because you were there.
Yeah. And what I would call out and just also acknowledge in this room is that we have the privilege of being three moms.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I know postpartum is something more prevalently experienced by mothers in those first 1 to 2 years, a lot of fathers or partners also experience that same loss in a different way. And I think more than before, and maybe it's because I'm older, or maybe because like we've had this kerfuffle and spat numerous times, but I'm so aware that I am forgetting the moments that I'm living in, and I get to be I'm so privileged to be a part of with my child, but Terry is missing them by proxy of work.
Mm-hmm.
So he's missing out by, not by force, I want to say, but there's like a, there's something in there around, I mean, he still chooses to go to work, he's chosen his career, he's chosen all those things, but in his best life, he would be home more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not financially feasible for us.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Vancouver.
Right.
And surrounding suburbs.
Yeah.
But there's something in there where he is experiencing a loss, and he is not experiencing those moments to start. And so I think about my days with Max, is there's an like that amplified need to document, because I want him to see his child when he can't. So with my mini computer phone, like I'm on it a lot more, and I'm trying to capture all these things, all while still processing my own feelings. Feeling inadequate in multiple ways, feeling hot and angry, feeling morose and sad, feeling all these things, and still, like, the weight on my shoulders feels doubled.
Mm-hmm.
Because I need to also make sure that my partner doesn't feel sad.
Mm-hmm.
I need to make sure that he doesn't feel like he's missing out. And so this time, it feels like I feel more like Atlas. Like, I feel more like I'm holding up the world, because my world is bigger. Simply just my innate tiny world. My one child, my one dog, my one partner, and my one new baby. It's like my world has expanded much larger, and it feels so much more heavy. And in that heavy is where I get angry, and in that heavy is where I also feel so isolated and alone. And that is the thing that hasn't changed between the first and the second. Is it still feels like no one in the world has ever experienced this. And especially with the anger, because it feels like it's not polite to talk about. I'm not allowed to be angry. I'm not allowed to feel like white hot rage. I'm not allowed to lose my shit. I'm not allowed to yell and scream and that just be that. I am allowed to yell and scream, and then I must apologize profusely. I must feel bad about it. There's all of these things that I'm feeling with this time around the angry that are like so hard to process, mm-hmm. and aren't just isn't just postpartum angry. It's like female angry,
mm-hmm.
which is loaded in so many ways, and it's such a strange concept because, and I said this to another mom that I'm a really good friend with, Scarlett saw me get angry,
mm-hmm.
and she said, why are you so angry? And then so I told her, mommy sometimes gets really upset and I get really angry, and so mommy grabs a pillow, mommy screams into the pillow.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not a normal conversation that you have on your six-year-old with a daily basis, but
disagree.
Here we are.
Disagree. I think that's a phenomenal conversation to be having with your six-year-old on a daily basis.
Yes, especially with a six-year-old girl. I think about Eden as well.
Yeah.
And she goes, can I scream?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. Well, scream.
Especially with a girl and especially with a boy and especially
yes.
with the
yes.
little like non-binary child who has to find their way in this world, because it's like, without, it's not that these feelings are bad, like our emotions, especially those like really powerful, deeply ingrained ones, give us such important feedback about what's going on.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I feel like the anger and the rage that erupts is from a place of like, things are so broken.
Yeah.
Like the roles that a lot of male identifying or non-bearing partners end up assuming by default
mm-hmm.
is the one of providing, which when we live in a time where like the cost of living and everything is skyrocketed and wage hasn't increased, like that's immense pressure. At the same time, like this partnership that we're supposed to be working on together ends up so polarized, because in order for one person to default to earning massive amounts of resources, the other partner has to by default bear the majority of the household responsibilities. But childbearing and rearing is supposed to be the most rewarding work, and it's the greatest gift to be with your kids. So shouldn't we be so damn grateful that we've inherited this role by default? Like, and so this system is so broken, and without like leaning into that discomfort and being willing to examine the brokenness, we're not going to be able to fix it or even try to improve it for our children, right? And so it's like, I think that saying, like, yeah, you scream into a pillow, it's like, anger is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Emotions that don't feel great are healthy, and this is what we can productively do with them. So we're
mm-hmm.
always saying, like, you are not allowed to take your feelings out on other people. You are not allowed to touch other people's bodies or make them feel badly. You are allowed to go outside and run around. You are allowed to scream into a pillow.
Mm-hmm.
You are allowed to remove yourself and process these emotions in a good way, so that you can come back and we'll talk about it later. And not, you're not being punished.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, your feelings aren't bad, but your feelings need space, and this is what you can do with them.
And you need to process rage. You need to, one of my teachers told me, you need to have it move through your body.
Mm, yes.
And so often you just get stuck in it, and where does it go?
Mm-hmm.
It comes mm-hmm. into you on a cellular level when you need to move it out and through
mm-hmm.
and find an outlet, whatever that outlet is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I remember when I was dealing with a lot of hurt and anger, when Eden was really young, and just I didn't know how or where to process it, and someone's like, yo, you need to go take a carton of eggs, find an empty parking lot, and you need to go smash those eggs and process it in a very healthy way.
Mm-hmm. The catharsis.
Ugh. And if anyone's listening who's like dealing with anger, I mean, like, just go break shit.
Yeah, and I rage thing. Like, full disclosure, when I have feelings that I'm having trouble processing, like, I have a playlist that's full of, like, specific, like, the Meredith Brooks, I'm a
oh,
bitch.
Yes.
Like, Alanis Morissette, You Ought to Know. Like,
oh, yes,
all of
no.
these, please go.
Do you know who is the best DJ and playlist maker in the entire world?
El Rizzi.
I mean, yes, shout out to El Rizzi, number 4 fitness DJ in all of Vancouver. No, Jay Kasuya hit her up on the Spotify. So right after my breakup,
yeah,
and I was feeling the feels, and I was dealing with those really long drives, because mm-hmm. that's what happens when you live in the burbs.
Yeah,
that's when I felt the most sad or the most angry.
Mm-hmm.
And so song number 1 on the playlist was from Jen, and it was Meredith Brooks, I'm a bitch, and just on repeat over and over again. Ugh. Mm-hmm. So anyways, if you need a good playlist, I'm pretty sure it's called...
For Ashley. Also, I'm not very good at naming playlists, so if you look at them, they're exactly what they say. So there's a playlist called Sad.
That's perfect.
It's sad music, people.
I found an old CD book that had a CD that was titled, I don't know, like, Mad at Boys.
Yes.
Or something like that, and I tried to play it, but it was quite scratched, unfortunately.
God.
A decade of neglect will do. But yeah, no, it's like, it's so helpful to have a productive activity to help move those feelings through so mm-hmm. that you can process them because
yeah.
like you said, like it's from a place of hurt and hurt people. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's one of those things that's been like maybe the most powerful thing for me to, I don't know, learn over the course of motherhood because it's like without having that filter for my reactions removed. Like I did so much like bottling up and coping and being nice and pretending things were okay. And it's like motherhood really exposed all of that. And like my defense mechanisms and coping mechanisms all came crashing down. And I had to deal with what I was actually doing and the hurt that I was perpetuating mm-hmm. from a place of not being healed, you know? Mm-hmm. And so but it's so overwhelming to unpack that alongside, again, all of the other things.
Yeah, while raising a tiny human.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who's still breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I mean, we've talked about this before. Like, it's hard enough to do the work when it is just you.
Yes.
And when it's you and a small person attached to your breast... and all the housework and shuttling around a second child and all of those things and still trying to be a good partner. And I know that I have not been a good partner. I know that, saying that out loud because it needs to be said. Not been a good partner because I've been so deep in my own little island mm-hmm. that it's hard because then you just feel more and more untethered. Mm-hmm. And like no matter where you start, you're like at the bottom of a giant sinkhole. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what side you pick, duh, it's round. But it's a hole, first of all. God, Jen. It doesn't matter where you start, or like it's a struggle either way. And, mm-hmm. and you still have all of these things on your back while you're trying to climb out. And it's just, mm-hmm. it's wild to do it. And what I feel more comfortable and more confident in this time is saying that I can't do it all. Mm-hmm. I haven't been doing it all. I haven't been doing it all well. Yeah. And I need help. Mm-hmm. Like today and after I had texted Ashley, I quickly thereafter the next day texted my mom and said I'm not okay mm-hmm. and then I quickly after that my sister-in-law messaged me and I said I'm not okay mm-hmm. And that's the extent of like the circle until this gets aired where mm-hmm. I've said I've been pretending.
Did you find it easier with each subsequent conversation? Was it easier to say I'm not okay, like was or did no. Did it change depending on the person? Like
there is this is gonna make me so sad. There is a level of deep rooted disappointment that I have with telling my close family. Mm-hmm. So like telling my mom telling my mom is like so important because I know she's who I want on my team mm-hmm. and I know like I need her mm-hmm. I need her like I was a newborn all over again. And the believed disappointment that I'm causing her by saying I can't do it is very overwhelming and real. Mm-hmm. And same with my sister-in-law, because she was also having her own struggle and difficulty after my nephew was born and is still working through some things. And I feel the disappointment in that is that I've let her down somehow. Like, anything I ever shared with her or offered her, it feels like I offered from the place where I was pretending. And so there's this deep disappointment in myself, almost like a shame that I couldn't do it, especially with those women in my life. And even telling you, I know that you would never say anything that would be like harsh or judgmental, and you would never think of me differently and all of those things. And I am so grateful for our friendship. And at the end of the day, like, telling you was scary because I didn't want to let you down. I didn't want it to be less of the person you believed me to be. And really who I was, because that's so hard. Like, we believe that people see you in a specific way. And even part of why, like, when I think about when you say why now, is because I am tired of letting other people write my narrative. And I'm tired of living into something that might not be me. And the, like, cost analysis of that, to get really sexy, is that it's just wearing me down more and more and more, because then I'm constantly measuring myself against something, against a person that I don't even know if I want to be. And so I'm falling short on all these things, and I don't get to claim any of them. So this time versus last time, and why now, is because I don't want to just be like, I don't want to be someone else's projection of what a mom should be. I don't want to be a projection. I want to be me. And me right now is, like, struggling and floundering. And me right now hasn't showered. And me right now, you know, good thing Max likes the bathtub, because that's where he goes when I need to pee. I just sit him in the empty bathtub, and he's happy as a clam. But, like, that's how I go to the bathroom. Like, I probably worn jeans 6 times. I don't take care of myself the way I want to, but right now that's who I am. And right now that's the best I can do. And that's how I'm processing, because I need to put the energy that I would put into, you know, being put together for every drop off and pick up and packing amazing lunches and all those things, I'm putting into just getting through 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. or whenever, you know, help arrives or someone can come or Terry gets off work or whatever that is. That's how I feel, like.
Okay, so context. People. Like, we're having this beautiful moment, and Jen's sharing, and then Justine's phone buzzes, and on her phone background, it's a picture of, like, half of Joe's face. It's his full face, just, like, staring at you, and it's, like, it's a little bit bewildered face, so. It's
very scary.
Yeah.
Very unsettling.
It's an unsettling photo, so that's what Kasuria saw.
Yeah, so I was trying to turn off the volume so I wouldn't disrupt the conversation, and the look on Jen's face was just glorious. But
moment over.
Yeah.
Moment but let's fucking go over.
But what I find so, like, interesting in that is, like, so much of, again, the fear of reaching out and saying to people, like, I'm not okay, comes from our worry about what they're gonna think about us, or, like, how we're gonna make them feel, when the reality is that, like, I know I look on the people in my life with the most generous and, like, loving and accepting perspective possible versus the one that I give myself. So it's like, by reaching out, what we're really doing is trusting that people will hold the space for our messiness and our brokenness so that we can heal. And, like, that trust and ability that people love us as we are, as our, you know, again, falling apart, screaming into a pillow self, like, that's so scary. Like, and I know part of, like, part of what drove me to
want to have a family, whether or not this is, it's not the right intention, to be perfectly honest. I know this now, but was like, I was really looking for that sense of like security and belonging and like, these are my people and now this is my core, whatever. And like, I thought that that would make me feel all of the safety, but then I ended up there and again, still feeling so threatened as if I wasn't enough. It's like, I thought that it would bring me there. It didn't. But yeah, there's something in there about like, we end up isolated and not able to have the people around us that are our most generous mirrors to hold us up, you know? And it's like, when we look at ourselves, we just see the worst. It's so sad.
Yeah.
Like, ugh. Anyway, I just feel so much for what you were sharing there and those like feelings of worrying about what people think and wanting to be loved and wanting to be whole and just wanting to be who you are.
Yeah. I do want to pivot a little bit. We did have a question come in. So I wanted to share this with you. It's a great, really powerful question that came in from Taryn Day. And Taryn wrote, I'd love to hear about Baby Max's hair care routine.
Baby Max has more baths and showers than I currently have, so I mean, A plus already.
Yeah.
Baby Max is also like a heartburn sandwich constantly. So that old midwife's tale where they're like, did you have heartburn with your child? Because he came out with a ton of hair.
Like, he has more hair than I do.
Oh, he looks like he's wearing a wig.
Yes. The first time that I saw him, I was a little bit like, what? Wait, like Elvis?
Yeah, what kind of sorcery is this?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, he's like a Rogaine commercial gone wrong.
Yeah. There's an
Rogaine?
Saturday Night. Oh, yeah, an SNL skit with for baby wigs. Anyways, one of Scarlett's, one of my close friends, Lisa, always references Max and baby wigs. And so there's like this joke, this running joke that he has baby wig, he's wearing a wig constantly.
Also, shout out to Lisa.
I know, isn't she great?
Oh, she's just the best. You would love Lisa. Have you touched Lisa? No, you haven't touched Lisa.
That's a sentence.
I know.
Have you touched Lisa?
Maybe.
It's possible. We're, can you believe this? We're almost at an hour.
Holy forking shirt balls.
Holy forking shirt balls. So I know, Jen, that you were like, okay, 100 sweaty sweats. You're sweating.
Oh, yeah. This is ready. This is basically sweat wherever I am through 100.
Yes. Yeah. what do you want people to know about you, or what message would you want to share, being someone who is a podcast aficionado and having the mic be yours right now?
What do I want people to know about me, or about, what do I want them to know?
I mean, it could be about narwhals.
Wait, can you repeat the question?
What do you want people to know?
Can you use it in a sentence?
I would like people to know from the Latin origin something. Either something about your, like, you know, like, oh, if I was ever on a podcast, what would I talk about? Well, right now there's a stare down going on between Justine's dog Freya and Jen.
What would I want people to know? I would want people to know that I would want people to know that what I've shared with you today is normal.
Mm.
What I would want you to know is that if you have people in your life that are either mothers or people who are just having a hard time and struggling, that you consider what you can say or offer them in those difficult times. You know how I feel like when you have a baby, everyone's really good at being like, oh, let me help you, let me bring you food, let me wash the baby for you, or let me come for a visit. And
I'm
like,
sorry, wash the baby for you?
Watch the baby. I mean, or wash the baby. I don't really care.
Oh, wash. I heard wash. I'm like, yeah. I've never had anyone offer to wash my child, but that would also be a nice one.
I mean, throw it in the bank of things to offer new mom, new families. Like, I feel like people are so good at the etiquette around what to do when you, like, like wash your hands before you touch the baby, like all these things, that I would just offer, what would you do? What would you do for someone who was struggling? So could it be could it actually just be the same? Let me bring you food.
Mm-hmm.
Could it still be, I mean, let me wash you. I don't know. Like, whatever. Yeah. Like, I don't know the level of your intimacy in relationships, but if that's what it is, like, what are those things that you could offer them so that they could have space, have reassurance, feel cared for and cared about in those moments where it feels too much for people to handle?
Mm-hmm.
I would also say that females can be angry, not about things in the news or politics, but about their own feelings and just be angry on their own. And that needs to be something that becomes more normal.
Mm-hmm.
And that we have a conversation about. And just to like piggyback on what I was saying with Scarlett, like I know it's not a normal, maybe it's not a normal conversation, but it's become a normal conversation. And what I appreciate about her little brain and her little human so much is that she can now say, I'm angry.
Mm-hmm.
And she can say, she looks at me and says, I am not happy because Max put his mouth on my doll, or I didn't have a good day at school because X, Y, and Z. And, you know, I saw her walk to her room and put her face in her pillow, and I was like, okay, this is what it means. It's, she has a new option for how she expresses and how she feels things. And that's something that, while I still feel shame around,
mm-hmm.
because I can't figure out how to regulate my own emotions, I'm also a little bit proud because she will never need to look back on her life and say, I can never think of a time where I saw my mom
mm-hmm.
not happy, or like mm-hmm. she will have seen me literally experience every emotion right in front of her eyes, and I'm aware of the impact that that has for her, both in a positive way and in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that the positive side of that is that she never has to feel like she can't
mm-hmm.
have a breakdown. She can't throw something on the ground. She can't scream in her pillow. She can't be unbearably sad. Like she,
mm-hmm.
and even for Max, I hope they never look at a time and think, never look back and think, I never saw
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's never not normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Same with like if Terry and I choose to have a conversation that turns into a wonderful spat that escalates to a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I say fight, not physically, but like
mm-hmm.
fight, like,
yeah.
That's probably what I sound like. I'm sure he'll weigh in on that one. But like, I know that those things all have a really big bearing and big impact on my children.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that also in that, they're able to see that that is normal
mm-hmm.
and modeled behavior, that it's not always like, honey, I'm home and flowers and date night and I don't always have dinner ready and I'm not always wearing a shirt, like whatever it is, like it's all of those things. And
balance, good things.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like it's all of those things and I want them to know that that's normal
mm-hmm.
and I want them to know that that's still, like, just because he and I fight doesn't mean that at the end of the day, I don't choose him and he doesn't choose me. And it doesn't mean that I love him less. And even though in those moments, maybe it feels like that,
mm-hmm.
but, that's what I'd want people to know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think that was a proper sentence or
no,
a paragraph.
I think that makes so much sense though, because it's like, it's about, you know, not modeling to our children that you have to be perfect to be a parent. Like it's not what you do, it's how you deal with the things that you've done. So it's like, yes, you can have your feelings and then explain what's an acceptable way to deal with your feelings and what's not. Apologize for things that you maybe shouldn't have done. Like,
And I think that the greatest gift in that we can give our kids is not that they have, again, this like perfect and happy childhood, but that they're equipped to deal with the ups and downs that life is inevitably going to come up against, like bring, or deliver to them. Because again, like just as we're doing the best that we can with the tools that we have, like our parents did the best that they could with the tools that they had. And part of what they taught us was this real boundary around like emotional etiquette.
Mm.
And I think that it's really great that we are busting that down a little bit. And even though it feels a bit uncontrolled right now, mm-hmm. I think we're at least putting the foundation in place to create some more structure for our kids to, again, be able to deal with things in a healthy manner.
Mm-hmm. I would also just say what I want people to know, and I've told you this before, and this is like not my purpose in life, but this is like something that I am like adamant about, and I, in my knowledge, is that I don't know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
100% of the time. And what I would say, whether you're a second-time parent, a fourth-time parent, a new parent, thinking about becoming a parent, not wanting to be a parent, just being a human on your own, nobody knows what the fuck they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in a place right now where so many people are professed experts in things, and bless. But when you put it all together at the end of the day, nobody knows what the fuck they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we are all just figuring it out.
Yep. It's fucking messy.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
All day. Jen, thank you so much for being on today's episode and sharing so openly and vulnerably. I hope that everyone loves it as much as Justine and I. And I, at the beginning, I was pretty much sobbing over here when you were speaking, because I was just so excited that you finally were on the podcast and for you to share your story. So thank you.
Thank you.
Justine, you're the best, always. You know, just lovely. You didn't say I have a theory once, but you did pull out some really good big words.
Oh, good. I do try.
You do try. I'd also like to give a special mention that Justine has started No Mo Simo Momo Homo.
No So Mimo.
No So Mimo. Wait, people are going to think I said homo, but I didn't, but it sounded like it. Anyways. So if people want to sign up for your super awesome, educational, and hilarious emails, where can they do that?
So they can go to justinesoames.com and just scroll to the bottom of the page. There's a little handy dandy sign up form that says, want to join my email list, which I call the emails Happy Friday. And they are just chock full of sarcastic musings about motherhood, entrepreneurship, and just trying to make it through the day.
Brilliant, brilliant. And Jen, where can people find you besides screaming in a pillow?
I mean, you can find me at the brick screaming into many pillows.
Sleep Country Canada.
Sponsor me.
Why buy a mattress anywhere else? Or a screaming pillow.
Yes, that would have been better.
I mean, get at me, Andy. I am living in Port Moody, so you'll probably find me drinking copious amounts of coffee, decaf, woo. Or you can find me on Instagram, but I'm private, so I'll probably creep you first before I allow you access to my Instagram, because my children. But otherwise, you know,
yay.
I'm around.
At four in the morning.
Yeah, I'm deep on Pinterest.
Jen and I also did no online shopping for the month of, well, October 11th to November 12th.
Mm-hmm.
And it was brilliant, because what was happening was Jen would be breastfeeding at 4 in the morning, and I would just, you know, toddler. And so when you go online at 4 in the morning, your brain doesn't tell you what you need and what you don't need.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So Amazon looks mighty enticing.
Also, makes you, when you're not feeling good, online shopping. Addictive. Feels a void.
Seriously.
Not healthy.
No.
Addictious.
Coping is coping.
Addictious? That's not a word. Okay, I need to go.
All right. Well, on that note, bye.
Bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Kilter and Mint podcast. If you like what you heard, please be sure to leave a rating and review. You can also follow me along on Instagram and Facebook at Kilter and Mint. And if you have a suggestion, feedback, or want to write a love note, the email is hello@kilterandmint.com. One final note before you go. If you live in Vancouver, check out my friend's studio called eBody Vancouver. Fun fact, B, the owner of eBody, and I met through a recent Pilates training. Shout out to Katie McKenzie from A La Lean Method. And it turns out that we actually went to middle school together. So her business, eBody, is electric muscle stimulation training. It's a low-impact, highly effective, time-saving vibe that only requires 22 minutes of training. A 22-minute vibe is equivalent to 90 minutes of strength training at the gym. Check them out at ebodyvancouver.com or on Instagram at ebodyvancouver. Okay, well, that's it. That's all for today. Okay, bye.